Hey everybody, you're listening to Top Quartile, where we bring you stories from the front lines of growth in community-focused financial services. Hello and welcome. I'm Dan Marks, partner and EVP here. And with me today, I've got a great guest, Natalie Bartholomew. Her day job is the Chief Administrative Officer at Grand Savings Bank, but she's maybe even better known as the Girl Banker. So Natalie, great to have you on the show. How's it going?
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. It's going great.
Awesome. Tell us about your role at Grand Savings Bank to set the stage.
So I am the Chief Administrative Officer here at Grand Savings Bank, and my primary duties, I like to say that I'm the fire putter outer. So things that need to be fixed or corrected, but more formally, I'm over marketing and human resources and training, innovation, and strategic planning. So lots of good stuff.
Yeah.
The good touchy-feely things of banking.
The really important heart of the bank, right?
Yeah.
Cool. And so maybe what's one fascinating fact about Natalie that most people don't know?
Well, and it's funny for me to say this because I feel like there was a part of my life where it was a very well-known common fact. I think as we have grown older and are now in two separate states, but I have an identical twin sister. And we are 5 minutes apart in age. We are now several hundred miles apart geographically. But yeah, I have a twin sister, Lindsay Kennedy, and she teaches agricultural communications at Texas Tech University in Lubbock. So not a lot of people realize that I have an identical twin. If we were side by side, you would probably not think we're identical. If we tried really hard and put some effort into it, we might could fool a few people, but when we were little, we definitely looked identical. So it's definitely a club, you know, the twin club to be a part of.
Yeah. Probably a secret to your productivity, right? You can literally be in two places at one time.
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, when we were in high school or really junior high and elementary school, the superintendent that we had in Prairie Grove, where we went to school, was not an identical twin. He had a fraternal twin sister. And he was like, you know, obviously we were never able to switch places. So he was like, if you want to do it, you won't get in trouble. But I feel like that our personalities were enough that we probably would have outed ourselves pretty quickly. Anyone that knew us pretty well could tell the difference. Our parents really encouraged us to have our own identity from a very early on stage. So we would have to rehearse and try really hard to fool somebody. We have like the same laugh. We have the same drive in terms of career, and we both hate to lose. We're both pretty competitive, both avid Arkansas Razorback fans, even though she's at Texas Tech now. So, you know, if like we were just knocked out of the College World Series, I say that knocked out. It's been a while. We're still not over it, clearly. And we texted each other the exact same thing at the same time. And it was the word devastated. Like I went down and was typing it out and she beat me to it. So it's crazy that we were on that same wavelength, but we're both easily upset by Arkansas athletics.
Which
we're invested.
Yes. As a Vanderbilt alum, I know heartbreak on athletics.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
So yes. Yes,
that could be a topic for a whole other podcast. Interesting College World Series this last year, no doubt. Lots of conversations could be had about the way that all worked.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, so tell us what's growth been like recently at the old Grand Savings Bank?
Oh, wow. This last year has just, when I say last year, someone the other day, or maybe it was a meme that I saw or something on TikTok. That's kind of one of my favorite pastimes these days. And it was that we're 5 months away from 2020 starting over 2 years ago. And I was like, holy cow. Yes, we are knocking on the door of 2022. So when we say this last year, it's actually been this last 18 months, which feels like an eternity, a decade, a century. But that being said, I know a lot of community banks are experiencing growth, but we have just really seen a lot of growth over the last 18 months. we've grown about $152-153 million in assets organically. That's not from an acquisition. That's all organic growth. We've had a lot of discussions about it. I would like to say it's a perfect storm of some really good marketing and HR work. We've got a really strong retail banking officer that I'd like to think that it's just a lot of those things that we've put a lot of time and effort and energy into coming to fruition. And so good things are happening here. We always say life is grand. So life is grand. It's been very, and you know, that kind of growth really poses its own set of challenges that we're working through. We're a smaller community bank that our asset size now is a little over 700 million. I'm not even going to quote what it is because it changes daily. But, you know, when you realize that kind of growth in a short amount of time and you're trying to be efficient with your staff and effective in that right. And, you know, we didn't lay anybody off during the pandemic, thankfully. I mean, we made it all work and kept everybody on staff. But now we're just realizing those growing pains of making sure that we're adequately staffed on the loan side and on the retail side and some of these operational positions, you know, from a marketing perspective, from an HR perspective of where we need to start boosting that up. Because if you're growing on the front end, you need to make sure you're accommodating the back as well. And we're just moving through all of that. I always say that there's never a boring day at Grand Savings Bank, where we always have a fun challenge and it's always interesting and fun. Life is grand.
Life is. Yeah. What a great yes. tagline. Right.
Yeah.
It's not terribly common, although I think it's really neat to think about the synergies between marketing and HR and training.
Yes. That's a good point. It's funny. So my role as chief administrative officer is not actually the first role I had when I came to Grand Savings. I've been in banking for over 20 years. I hit 20 years this year, started as a teller and kind of worked through the bank and have had various roles all over the bank, but came here as the chief marketing officer. And the marketing role is actually, I've been a lender in my career longer than I've been in the marketing space, which is really backwards sounding to me now. And I'm sure most people would not like believe that, but I'm kind of new to the marketing realm in terms of the length of my career. The bank that I was at before Grand Savings, I was kind of in a private banking role, had a lending authority, and then was the marketing director. And so really leaned into that marketing piece and was able to join Grand Savings as the chief marketing officer, but started noticing again in that growing bank environment where there was value added from a leadership perspective and strategically of combining those two things together with human resources. And have a great HR director here at the bank that we have a great partnership and just can collaborate really effectively. And it's really, to me, essential for a community bank to have that grasp of how to marry marketing and culture together. And HR is clearly a big piece of that because you're only as good as your people. And we always say that people bank with people. Here in Northwest Arkansas, there's banks all over the place. You can, what is the saying? You can throw a rock, can't throw a rock without hitting a bank or something like that. And honestly, we're all the same, right? We all have the same products and services and to some capacity. There's nothing sexy about banking. Let's be clear. It's boring, but it's the way you package it and market it that kind of sets you apart. But at the end of the day, the real difference are the people that you have hired there. And those are your greatest assets. That's what makes your set of products and services that much better than the next bank. And finding a way to not only recruit, but retain the best talent and people that truly represent the communities that we're in has really been a great strategy for us. I attribute a lot of our growth to the people that we have on staff. I kind of consider our team as being our brand ambassadors, because if you don't have someone that you trust and respect with your financial decisions at your community bank, I mean, and I know that kind of plays into this whole idea that everything's online anymore, but you want to talk to a person when you have a problem. And so our people really set us apart. And that's a long answer to saying that I feel that combining that marketing and human resources piece together within this chief administrative role has been really great for us. It's definitely been a fun challenge for myself. It's definitely the the best role I've had in my career and one I'm most proud of. I'm starting to see this role pop up in other banks all over the place because I think they're also realizing, hey, there's really a benefit to kind of combining these things together from a leadership perspective. I get a lot of requests for my job description, and I have a job description. I'm like, you understand though, every bank's different. You can't really box it in. And this is what worked best for us.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I did some work one time with a consultant who I have a lot of respect for, Vinod, was it Deloitte? He pointed out, he said, you know, one of the fun things I like about working with CMOs is everyone's a little different.
He said,
you know, if working with a CFO, they kind of fall into, they either came up through the kind of public accounting track or investment banking track. I mean, there's some very sort of defined.
Definitely.
You know, there are two or three paths. CIOs, kind of the same thing. They either sort of came up through the operational role or like the engineering application. So, you know, again, two or three, and that you can sort of tell it impacts personality and all those things. Because, it seems like every CMO, the paths come from all different. And so it's neat to hear about. I didn't know about the path from, you know, kind of lender up through marketer, which probably gives you a really great practical picture of how the HR aspects and the marketing aspects kind of intersect with the tip of the spear.
It definitely gives me more of a perspective in terms of personality types and connections and the network that I've created. It definitely does give me a lot of insight in that regard. So when I started my banking career, I had always been told that if you ever wanted to rise through the ranks into management and you wanted to make the good money, you had to be in the lending space. And I'm a big advocate for, obviously, for women in banking, but for telling our youth that there are a lot of opportunities in banking. Don't look at it as just, you know, you have to be in business development or lending, and not to discount those roles. Clearly, they're extremely important and essential in the banking space and very much appreciated. But, you know, that may not fit your personality. I found that my passion was more in the creative, touchy feely people part. And that's why I really leaned into the marketing side, which kind of led to this role I have now. Whereas I've met people in my career that, I mean, they can just make it rain on the loan side because of their skill sets. And so I think it's really important that as we're building the next generation of bankers, that we advocate and tell others that, hey, there's more to banking. There's clearly a need on the IT side. We need to make sure that we're adequately equipped from a technology perspective. There's the human resources side. There is marketing. There's a lot of, I don't even like to say back office opportunities, but operational infrastructure, really important roles there that all different types of skill sets are necessary. So that kind of staunch in the suit thought or view of a banker, we've got to discard that and realize that if we want to be effective and adapt going forward, we've got to understand that there's a lot of different moving parts that make us tick.
Yeah. You say that, you remind me of, I went through one of these leadership training exercises one time, and the structure wasn't terribly important, but it was, I remember this one. It was some kind of role-playing thing. The leader that got picked to be the president in this role play organized the room very functionally. Like, okay, this group over here, this group over there. And then he basically set his executive team in the center. And he thought, okay, well, this is very efficient. I can see what's going on. Everybody's connected or whatever. But then in the report out, they had the facilitators had everybody describe kind of the way, you know, kind of chart the way they felt and how energized they felt through the process. And I'll never forget this. What you said reminded me is, so everybody was sort of feeling very, very energized. It was kind of slope up. And then all of a sudden some groups took a nosedive at a particular point in time, and other groups kept filling up. And when they probed into what that was, they said when the executive leader created kind of the central table and the kids' tables, it created a sense of de-energizing. And I think, and so your point is spot on about all the different roles are essential to getting to where we need to go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think if somebody describes something as a support job or a back office job, what you're doing is saying, okay, you're not essential to achieving the mission of what we're trying to achieve.
Right. Right. Yeah. We have to be super careful to make sure that the way we, and I love to see that a lot of banks are starting to change even the teller title to universal banker, or because they are. I mean, let's think about it. It may be in some ways an entry level position, but they are the face of our organization and they are tasked with not only just everyday transactions, but their interaction daily with the customer. They are the bank to so many people. We want to retain those people. We don't want them to go to the bank down the street because our customers will walk with them. They're responsible for fraud. These are skills that we've got to make sure are well refined, and we don't want those roles to be turning over. You know, it really calling it what it is. I mean, the universal banker is much more appropriate. I love to see some of the creativity with how we're changing those titles. But, you know, sometimes you just have, you've got to get away from the whole, well, this is how we've always done it. Well, I don't care. Let's think of it differently. We can't devalue these roles because they're all so important, especially in this growing atmosphere. And I think we've really seen that more now in the last few months than we normally have.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've got kind of a unique approach, particularly in the spanning marketing and HR and from kind of the line experience. Mm-hmm. How would you describe your leadership philosophy and approach?
I'm not sure there's a great way to define my leadership philosophy. I love to always be very open-minded. I know how I want to be led. So I think that's how I want to lead. And that's is to recognize those with talent and get out of their way, let them do the job. I've been micromanaged before. I don't want to do that to others. We have the word empower in our mission statement here at the bank. And I think that you can't just be lip service and just use it in your mission statement. You have really got to put that to use. So if you're bringing that talent to the table, you truly have to empower them to do their job. That creates job satisfaction. That does, you know, encourage retainment of that employee. But what does empowerment truly mean? First and foremost, making sure they have the tools and resources to do their job, making sure that you're giving them educational opportunities and development. I really like to say that if you've got people in quote unquote management or leadership, are those people doers and developers of people, or are they just doers? To me, if you're going to be in a leadership position, yes, you've got to know the job. Yes, you've got to be able to do it, but you have got to be developing others. If you are missing that element, then you're not a leader. You have got to be developing people. So anytime we've looked at organizational structure, which with the bank growing our size that we are, and we always are looking at that structure and making sure that, hey, are we set up adequately for success? Are we setting our team up for success? And so when you look at those different levels of leadership, you know, you can look at the role itself and then kind of put the people into it and go, well, are those people developers of people? And if the answer is no, then you got to take a hard look at that and make a decision on whether or not that, you know, you need to put somebody else in that role. Because if you're not continuously developing those beneath you, I don't even want to say beneath you, those that may report to you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be, one of the things that we always say here is that we're always training our number two. If I'm hit by a bus tomorrow, God forbid, who's going to step in and take that role? If that is an unknown answer, then that's a shame on me as a leader. I need to make sure that I'm adequately developing those and empowering them to do their job. I would say that people development piece is really, really big and something that I hope that my team would call me out on if I'm not doing that with them.
And I have to wonder if that was how that's related to, you hear a lot about people talking about establishing a personal brand, and you quite literally did that with the Girl Banker. I mean, if I look on your social profiles, it's almost a logo. So talked about.
Yep, it is.
Yeah, it is. So talk about the background for that, why it was important to brand yourself the Girl Banker.
Sure. Several years ago, I think I launched in 2017. So again, I'm losing track of what day or year it is anymore. But about that time of my career, I had been back from maternity leave for a few months at that point from having my second son, Witten. And was kind of just at a point where I knew I was meant to do more in my role as a woman in banking. there was a lot going on culturally at that time, the Me Too movement. You were just hearing a lot more about women in the world and leadership and making sure that there was equal pay. There was just a big conversation around that, still is and still should be. But I remember going to a banking conference. I was there with another girl banker friend of mine, Erica Preston, who I went to banking school with in Colorado. We became really good friends because of our connection there. And she's here in Arkansas. And I remember us just going, oh, we're like the only women here. And not only are we the only women here, we're the only young women here. And it kind of just really bothered me. Who's the next generation of girl bankers? For women, who's going to want to come into this industry? We were kind of setting there was a barrier of entry almost of, you know, there's less of a hill to climb if you're going to go into the medical field or if you're going to go into education. Banking, no, there's nothing here for you. Look around. There's no one here that looks like you. And then I would go and speak to high schools. You know, they always want someone to come for career day. And I always would laugh. I would accept it and I would go because I felt like it was work I needed to do. And let me digress for just a moment and say that I always knew I wanted to be a banker. I played bank as a child. It was always something I wanted to do. I know. I played Barbies a lot. I was a farm girl, well-rounded, but I played bank. And my grandfather was a banker he passed away before I became a banker. I hate that I never had the opportunity for us to have those fun discussions, but just was exposed to that early on. And that influence is what made me interested in this industry. So, you know, whenever I had the opportunity to go speak to schools, I would always take that chance. And I mean, I would leave wanting to bang my head against a wall because just the level of interest was so minimal. There was, you know, somebody doing much cooler things at a few tables down than talking about banking. So there was never a whole lot of interest specifically from the young women about being a banker. That paired with my experience at this conference of there not being any women there. And, you know, it just kind of hit home that, hey, somebody needs to be doing some advocacy here. I had been watching Jill Castilla from Citizens in Edmond and what she was doing as a female CEO and just really changing the landscape and the brand that she created herself. So fast forward a few months and a good friend of mine and mentor, Allison Twiggs Dyer, and I are sitting. And every time I tell this story, I have to include her because she's such a big piece of that story. We were at another conference sitting at a table and she'd been telling me, you should really do a blog as you're trying to build a brand. And I'd been kind of trying to build my following on Twitter by just engaging with other bankers and different people in the industry and kind of working on that, but the blog just didn't seem like a good move because I thought, what in the world do I have to say that anyone wants to listen to, like, or read about? There's nothing I have to say that's really any more interesting than anyone else. And so we're sitting there at this conference talking about it. And Allison's like, it's clearly women in banking. And so the girl banker title was kind of created at that table that day. It was a play off of Girl Boss, which is kind of funny because that's, I think, labeled chuggy now by this new generation, the word, the phrase Girl Boss. So I don't know if I want to attach it to that, but it also, to me, spoke to young women. Because it's funny, when I came out with that name, I actually had a lot of criticism, not from men, but from women about the name, the girl banker. It was just a few here and there that would poke fun at it and they felt offended by it. And as my then 6-year-old son, he's now 11, he was like, well, Mom, the woman banker just doesn't sound very good. And I was like, no, you're right. I mean, so it's obviously a fun play on all those things, but that's kind of how it was born. And so I just started writing. I created a blog and started writing articles. One of them, the first one I did was about mom guilt. I felt like that spoke to not just women in banking, but working moms everywhere. You feel this guilt for being at home and not at work. If you have to take a day off or if you're home with a sick child and then you feel guilty, is equally guilty when you're at work and not at home with your child. And so it's just kind of this unfortunate imbalance all the time. And so it kind of went from there. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal kind of caught wind of what I was doing and put me on their cover. And so next thing I knew, I'm doing speaking engagements. And now we have the podcast and the Girl Banker podcast, and here I am talking to you. And it's just, it's been a very interesting ride. But at the end of the day, the common denominator is that there was a need for advocacy for women in this industry, not just to put out a fun logo and gather all around in a circle and sing kumbaya that we're women in banking. But it was more that, hey, there's effective policy and change needed to make sure that we're retaining good women in banking in our industry, that we are telling the story of opportunities for young women in this industry that otherwise maybe they wouldn't have known. And creating a really great network and community. So I have a private Facebook group that is for women in banking only. So I don't even allow vendors in there. We really try to protect the integrity of the group, because there's a lot of conversation about vendors. There's a lot of conversation about job descriptions, just whatever practices that, you know, and it has just grown exponentially, especially through the pandemic. So didn't put a whole lot of effort into it initially. It was just kind of like, oh, I should probably do a Facebook group, even though I love Instagram. And that's really more of my default platform. But turned around and here we are with close to 4,500 women from all over the country in this group. And it's a very, very specific niche group. And we have some fantastic conversations in there. And hopefully we're helping each other out without any fear of a boss seeing a question about, you know, there's some really touchy topics that are talked about. Sometimes I get anonymous questions sent to me that I will post in there, but we cover a lot of different things and it's just a really great safe space to do that. But needless to say, that community and the network that this platform has created has been really fun to watch grow. And I do have a store as well to get Girl Banker merch, and that's been fun. But needless to say, I it's just been a fun ride and excited to see where it continues to grow.
Yeah, for sure. It's neat to hear all the story of sort of brands with a purpose, if you will, and yeah, how a personal brand became even bigger than the person.
Yeah, it's definitely not about me by any means. I'm just part of that conversation.
What's your perspective on, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about just what's the future of white collar work? Are we returning mm-hmm. back to the office? Or are we going to stay mm-hmm. remote or hybrid? As you were talking, I thought that's probably got even some unique aspects in the mom space. So what's your point of view on that?
So that's a really, really good question. And you know, I think it's not a one size fits all answer either. I think it was last week. My sense of time is really skewed these days. I posed this question on my Instagram stories because I was working from home because, as we were talking about earlier, I had pneumonia last week and didn't want my coworkers to have to hear me hack and cough all day. So I worked from home and I worked from home for 2 months during the pandemic. That was such a bizarre experience as a banker. You know, as bankers, that's not something that we typically have done before. So it was very out of the box for a lot of us. And I'm in an environment, have a 75-mile round trip commute on a daily basis. So not having that commute, I have a very collaborative workspace with my CEO and our retail banking officer, and not being in that space and not having the commute and still having plenty of work to do, actually working longer because, you know, you'd look up and it'd be 6 o'clock, and just because you're not in the office and don't have to get in the car and drive home, it's changed things so dramatically. But I came back in 2 months after and just, you know, had just thinking through that whole experience and then having the flexibility to still work from home, but kind of feeling guilty when I do. Like I need this day to be home to be productive, but is anyone talking bad about me for, you know, I mean, that's kind of a culture thing too, that we all have to be looking at. But all that being said, I had personally the privilege of having a lot of help. I'm the fifth generation on my family's farm. My boys are the sixth generation. My husband is a real life cowboy. I'm pretty sure my parents like him more than me because he's there doing the work on the farm. And it's just a great kind of storybook setting, but they are down the hill from us on the farm and the boys can run down there. And my in-laws live 2 miles away. And so I have this amazing support system. And so even though I have the flexibility to work from home and whatever, that support system really enables me to have the career that I have. But all that being said, not every woman in banking had that flexibility. When kids came home and weren't in school, they were trying to do the job and also try to teach the kids. Or maybe their husband couldn't help out, or maybe they were a single mom. Or there's a lot of variations of this story to where that support system may or may not have existed at the level that mine did. And so I certainly recognize how privileged and fortunate I am to have that. But recognizing, too, that the work from home scenario is, again, not a one size fits all thing. And I think as banks, we have to recognize that, again, those employee roles aren't always one size fits all. And what can be done remotely and what should be done in the office and defining that. You know, there's a lot of conversation in my private group about policies for work from home. And that's really hard. If you sit down and try to hammer that out, it's difficult. So what roles qualify for doing that? Is it based on the employee or is it based on the role? Can you trust everyone to do this? And if you can't trust them to do that, should they be on the payroll to begin with? I mean, there's just so many different things. So I pose this question, a series of questions on my Instagram stories. One, do you have the ability to work from home? Two, do you prefer to be in the office? Do you prefer to be at home? And at the end of the day, here's the thing. We want flexibility. So we want it all, and that's okay. We want the ability to come to the office. I probably do better in the office, but I sure love the opportunity to go home when necessary. Some people prefer to be home more and just want to pop in the office every now and then, and that's okay too. So I think the common denominator to that series of questions, even though there were a lot of different interesting pieces of input that I received, is that we just want the flexibility to do it. So I think that's a challenge to community banks of, surely you're able to send people remotely now after what we had to go through last year, but are you evolving as a result, or are you like, oh, reverting back to how things were? And I think that is where we're going to see what I've heard referred to, and I don't know who to give credit to, the turnover tsunami. I feel like if you're not offering that flexibility, regardless if you're defining exactly what that is or not, you could lose some really great talent to people who are evolving to be flexible, because this job market is very fascinating to watch. And it's up to us to evolve and figure out a way to retain those employees.
Yeah, very well said. And thanks for that perspective, for your unique vantage point. And man, the time has just flown. Yeah. How would you summarize some key takeaways based on this conversation?
Listen, I think that I know there was a very short amount of time in my life where I thought teaching high school finance was the route for me, that I had just been too siloed in my thinking that banking was where I should be. And I learned very quickly that nope, banking is where it should be. And that was crisis averted. I would have been a terrible teacher. Banking may not seem sexy, but it is so fun. And it is, there's so many wonderful people in this space and such a great industry to be a part of. We provide value for people all over the country in some form or fashion. And it's great to see how community banks are adapting new technology and how we're trying to evolve as these challenger banks pop up. And you're seeing community banks create neobanks to help compete against that. And just such a fascinating industry to be a part of right now. And so many opportunities specifically for women, and just a great group of people. I've loved the digital connections that I've made through this personal brand. And I think that's been really helpful in my career. And I always advocate for making sure that you're connecting with people outside of your organization so that you have good perspectives. My takeaway here is community banking's where it's at. And I'm here to stay in this industry. And I think that there's a lot of really cool things happening. And the pandemic created a lot of interesting challenges for us. But I think that we, aside from the devastating aspects of the pandemic, what it's forced us to reevaluate will make us better in the long run.
Yeah, very well summarized. And so at the very end, if you could go back in time and sit down with kind of your younger self, or maybe another potential girl banker, you know, maybe you're talking to somebody who's maybe had not considered and maybe not always had the desire to play bank. What's some advice you would give to the aspiring girl bankers out there?
I would say never discount the power of connections. Do not silo your thinking in terms of your opportunities. Just because a certain person tells you this is what you're going to be and this is how you're going to do it, do not box yourself in. If you work hard and learn, you're going to fail. Learn from those failures. You're never going to learn if you don't fail. And stay connected to the right people. Always be very, very careful of who you're hitching your wagon to. I know my boss says that a lot. There's a lot of value in that phrase. Your career will be very fruitful. Do the work. Stay connected. Keep your mind open. And don't box yourself in.
Very well said. Natalie, hate that our time's in. Always great to talk to you.
Yes. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
That's it for today on Top Quartile. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Top Quartile wherever you find podcasts on any podcast app. And while you're at it, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. And if you're interested in getting an opportunity assessment, head over to infusionmarketinggroup.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.